Okay, we are on the fifth parak of Ksubis, Nun Dalet Amid Beis.
Well,
we learned the Mishnah last week.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to start again the Gemara. It's 2, 4, 6, 8 lines in the bottom of the page. Nun Dalet Amid Beis, 54b2. Okay, the Mishnah said that even though the minimal amount of a ksuba for a virgin is 200 zuz, and almana is 100, but if you want, you're allowed to add whatever you want, right? And then it came the argument, does she get it only from the marriage or even from the kedushin? Okay, but that's not what the Gemara is talking about now. But the Gemara says, pshita. The Gemara asks, pshita. Of course he can add, why can't you add? Why the Mishnah seems to say it then, even though the minimal amount is 200, if you want, you could add. Of course, you could add whatever you want. I can give you $1 million if I want. What's the Mishnah saying? So Gemara answers, no, by Ksuba is different. Because Mao would say, I would think, Kitsusa of the Rabbanon, the Chachamim made a fixed amount. Not more, and not less. Why? Shalei Levayish, this piece of Gemara we still learned. Shalei Levayish es Misha Enlai, not to embarrass somebody who doesn't have the money. Because you can imagine one guy is wealthy, he's going to write a ksuba for $1,000. Another guy is poor, he's going to write only 200 zuz, because that's the minimal. So he might get embarrassed. Like we remember, this is what we learned last week about the shrouds for the burial, that everybody's equal, that's what Rabban Gamliel. So I would think by ksuba is the same thing. So the Mishnah says no. The only fixed amount is the minimal amount of the ksuba. 200 and 100, but you can give as much as you want. Now the Gemara says like this. Imratulah, he said, and the Mishnah said also, if you want to add, you're allowed to add, right? No matter what you want. So the Gemara says, Ratzalichtev lo leiktani. It doesn't say if he wants to write her the extra amount. It says, Ratzalah, if he wants to add. Okay? What does it mean? So what does it mean? It means like this. Messiah le rabbaivu. This is a proof to what the Revival says in the name of Rabbi Yannai. The Amr Rabbi Aivo, Amr Rabbi Yannai. Rabbi Aivo says in the name of Rabbi Yannai, Tanai Ksuba, Kuksuba Dami. The conditions in the Ksuba, are there even if you didn't write them. This concept we learned already before in the Gemara. The Gemara is saying over here like this. It says if he wants to add, it doesn't say if you want to write it in the ksuba more. Meaning there's certain things that a woman collects even if it's not in the ksuba.
Not written, you mean?
Even if it's not written in the ksuba.
It's an automatic.
It's automatic. And that's why the Mishnah doesn't say if you want to write this and this and that. Because it's automatic. And the Gemara says, what does it mean? Nafkamina, what is this? That the stipulation is like the ksuba itself. And now remember we learned, the stipulation of ksuba, the husband has to heal her. If she gets in prison, he has to redeem her. She gets fed from the estate afterwards. The kid she has, all these things that we learned before in the Gemara, in the previous chapters, that are conditions of the ksuba, and the Gemara says that the Amishah teaches us the conditions, the unwritten conditions of the ksuba are equal to what's written in the ksuba. And the Gemara said, where do you see this difference? The Gemara mentions like 10 things now. 14 things. Anyway. Okay. What's the difference? Meaning like this. Lemecheres. If a woman sells her ksuba, we learned in the past, in the olden times, if you were a gambler, a woman would sell her ksuba. Meaning like this. If the wife dies first, there is no ksuba. It's only if the husband dies does she collect the ksuba, right? So let's say the ksuba is $200. The woman wants to have cash. She comes over to a guy and says, listen, I'll sell you my ksuba for $100. Instead of $200, what's the gamble? If I die first, you lose your $100. My husband dies first, you're going to get $200. So it's an investment that's pretty risky, 50-50 or whatever it is. It's a risky investment. But in the olden times, the Gemara says people used to sell, the women used to sell the ksuba. They needed, for whatever reason, wanted cash. They would sell the ksuba, and guy would buy it. Now, what happens if
if the ksuba had more in it, like you said, you're allowed, but it's not written, so it's
that's what the Gemara says. So what happens, those conditions of the ksuba that are not written, when she sells her ksuba, those are also included in the sale.
Ah.
Or mecheles.
Now it's a business.
If a woman waives her ksuba, okay? Meaning she says to the husband, you know what? I mochel the ksuba. I waive the ksuba. So then the din is not only the 200 zuz does she waive, she waives all the conditions of the ksuba. Or another thing is meredes. A rebellious woman. A rebellious woman. A woman who rebels against the wife, the husband, okay? So she doesn't listen to the husband, like she refuses having relations with him or whatever. So, the Gemara says, the Bezdin reduces her ksuba weekly until there's nothing left. So the Mishnah telling us, this din is telling us, that if the woman keeps rebelling, it doesn't stop when the ksuba's 200 is done. It keeps going for the other things also. It keeps reducing and reducing and reducing until it's all over. Or lepigamis, a woman who impairs her ksuba. What does it mean, a woman who impairs her ksuba? She gives a document that the guy paid half of it. Let's see. The ksuba originally is 200. What happens if the husband paid 100? And she writes a receipt, I got 100. Because that already blemishes the power of the ksuba. Because once he paid half, maybe he paid the whole thing. And we don't know about it. Maybe, you know, there's other things. But it includes everything. Or, tevas, a woman who demands a ksuba. Okay? For instance, we learned before in the Gemara that when the husband dies, the woman sustains herself from the estate. Right? That's until the woman comes and asks for her ksuba. What happened? Let's say the husband died. Okay? And she can keep eating from the estate until she dies or remarries. What happens a year after the wedding? She says, oh no, I want my paid up ksuba. Then if she loses the rest of the rights, all the other things that she gets. Okay. Or Levetis Aldas, a woman who is decides to become non-religious, and then the din is the husband can divorce her without giving her a ksuba. So again, not only doesn't she get the ksuba, she doesn't get even the additional ksuba. Okay, Nun Hei Amid Aleph, the Shvach, if she gets the appreciation of the land, meaning like this, what happens if there are assets at the time when the guy wrote the ksuba, and then the assets became worth more? So the wife doesn't get the ksuba from the additional assets, only from the asset that was there when the guy wrote the ksuba. In other words, let's say when she wrote the ksuba, when her husband got married to her, he wrote the ksuba for 200 zuz. The field was worth 200. No. It was worth 150. When they wrote the ksuba. But that's all he had. It was worth 150. Then it became worth 200. She can only collect 150 from the field.
Well, why did we say before, last time, that, I mean, the Ahmed before, that with the eating, she was able to eat even more. The Rabbanim were much more lenient to let her have
right.
much more.
Until she asks for the ksuba. Here we're talking about
when
she was collecting for the ksuba, so then she cannot get from the husband's assets that got worth more.
And the same thing would apply to the field. She's not allowed to
the
eat
same thing. The firstborn also doesn't get double
right,
in
she
that.
She can't get the gleaming from the field.
Right.
Cool.
In other words, I should. We're talking about the field became worth it after the husband died. She could only collect until the husband died. The fields that were worth more, she can collect from. But the fields that became worth more after the husband died, just like the firstborn doesn't get double of that part of it, she cannot collect the ksuba from that part of it either. Or the case of ksuba, or shvua. What does it mean, shvua? Well, she has to swear, right? Let's say a woman that comes to collect the ksuba, she has to swear that she didn't get the ksuba. Okay? Or let's say one witness says the ksuba was paid. She has to swear against the witness that it wasn't paid. So the same oath that she's swearing on the ksuba, she's swearing on the additional parts of the ksuba also. Not only what's written, but all the other parts also. And shvius, the din of shmita. Okay? Now, shmita normally cancels all debts. You know, the sabbatical cancels all debts. It doesn't cancel the debt of the ksuba. So not only doesn't it cancel the 200 zuz, it doesn't cancel the entire ksuba. And also, lichtev konechosev lebanav. If a guy wrote all the properties to his son, okay, it says it then like this. If one writes over his properties to his sons, and assigns to his wife a piece of land of any size, she forfeits the ksuba. Whatever. But then the same thing is, not only does she forfeit the ksuba, she also forfeits all the conditions of the ksuba. Uminaz ligves min akarka, she can only collect the ksuba from real estate, not from tangible money. Minazi buddhis, she gets the inferior land. I'll explain this in a second. The chosman, she bebeis avia, and as long as that she's in the father's house, after his death, she can only collect the ksuba. If she didn't demand it for many years, her sons doesn't constitute a waiver. But if she goes back to her father's house, meaning like this, if a widow, the very interesting concept the Gemara says, if a widow, the husband died, the widow lives in the estate.
The marital estate.
Yeah. She can collect the ksuba, even though now she's eating everything, she can collect the ksuba forever. 30 years later, she can wake up and say, you know, I want to collect the ksuba now. But if she goes home to her father's house, so then the din is, she basically forfeits the ksuba, she can only collect it up to 25 years.
But she goes to the father's house,
she can only collect it.
She moves back into the father's house.
After the husband died.
After her husband's nifta.
Yeah, so if she moves back to the father's house, she only has 25 years to collect the ksuba.
Only 25 years.
Only 25 years.
And what happens during that time frame if the assets depreciate? I mean, appreciate.
There's no assets.
Appreciate.
But she only collects.
She only gets what
existed.
But no food right. Or any of the other conditions are there. Only the money.
Right. She doesn't get to eat that stuff.
She can only collect it up to 25 years. After 25 years, she gets nothing.
Well, what does she get to collect? She gets to eat the food and everything? No, because she's not living there.
Right. If she doesn't live there, she doesn't get it.
Right. Only she can go back and get the 200 zuz.
Right. The heirs do not serve a supporter there.
There's 25 years to collect the ksuba.
Any further sign counts as a waiver, and that even the supplemental amount she also doesn't get. It's interesting, the letter go back 25 years. In other words, like this, the woman, the widow, only gets supported from the husband's estate if she lives there. She can't go back to her family and tell the sons, I want you to support me. If they want to, they can do whatever they want. But the sons halachically can tell the woman, you either stay here and we'll support you, or if you go there, we're not supporting you anymore. Once that happens, she has up to 25 years to collect the ksuba. After 25 years, she can't collect it. But if she's still in the husband's estate, she can collect the ksuba forever. Okay? Now,
isn't that a little contradictory? If she goes to move back to the father's house,
yeah,
then
the kids don't support her anymore.
Everything should stop right then and there.
No, she has a right to collect the ksuba.
So she has to get it then. Why wait 25 years?
She doesn't want it now.
She has up until 25 hours to redeem it.
It's like you have a lottery ticket. You have what? To 1 year to claim it?
1 year.
Okay, it's 25 years.
Okay. For $200. Okay.
It's not $200. It's 200
zuz.
It's a lot of money.
Enough to live on for.
But all the other side stuff she gave up. All the other additional items that he promised her are now null and void.
Yeah, but I'm saying after 25 years, she can't get anything.
But the extra stuff she can get up to the 25 years?
No, since she moves to her father's house, she doesn't get any of that.
She doesn't get any of that.
Supplemental thing, she gets nothing, right?
She gets nothing.
Right.
Promised the car, there's that. She moves out of the house, she's done. Stay in the house. Everyone keeps the house anyway.
Okay. Next. Now the Gemara says,
let the father
move in.
There are two big cities in Bavel, Pumpadisa and Masa Machasya. Okay? That's what it's called. One was Pumpadisa, and one was Masa Machasya. The Gemara is going to say a few things that they argued about, these two yeshivas in Bavel. Itmar says like this, Ksuba is benin dichrin. Regarding the Ksuba awarded to male children, I'll explain in a second. Pumpadisa, in the city of Pumpadisa, they said, Leitarfim in Meshabda, they cannot collect it from the, from properties which were sold. If they write like this, I'll explain in a sec. Because the Mishnah says, Yirsin Tanan, that you will have for me, they will inherit the money that they share with the brothers. Meaning like this. The question was, what did it actually say in our Mishnah? That was the question between Pumbadisa and Masa Machasya. It means like this. When a guy writes a ksuba, in fact, this is what it says in the ksuba. Every property I own, every property I will own from here on, even the shirt off my back, I feel mugrima da katfoy, b'chaya yabasa chaya miyam adenan alalam. That's what it says in the ksuba. From this day on, everything is bound. Okay? Now, the woman can go collect even from fields that the husband sold. Correct? Let's say the Ksuba was written first day 2017. Yeah? He died 2020. Any fields that the husband sold between 2017 and 2020 when he died, she has a right to go collect those fields. The value of the Ksuba. Okay, she can collect the value of the Ksuba.
Up to the value of the Ksuba.
Yeah, of course. Okay. Now, the ksuba of the male children is not collected from this money. What does it mean? Male children and above, they share with their brothers. According to this, the ksuba of the male children was not enacted as a debt obligation, but rather as an inheritance. Okay? What does it mean? It says like this. The ksuba of the male children means the husband writes to the wife, or like we learned before, even if he doesn't write it. The husband says, any male children you're going to have from me will inherit together with the other children.
With the brothers.
But the other children, the brothers. Now, the question is like this. Is that inheritance or a debt? If it's inheritance, okay, I'll give you a simple example. Father has kids, yeah? 2017, he sold the lands. And then 2020, the father dies. Can the kids go to the property sold?
No.
Of course not. Right? When you inherit what he has then. Okay? If it would be a debt, like a ksuba, the debt you collect from the original sale of when the ksuba was written, 2017. Now the question is like this. When the male children that he has from this wife, the husband's marrying this woman, could be his other wives too, by the way. He says to this woman, the male children you're going to have from me are going to inherit this ksuba. Now, is it inheritance or is it a debt? If it's a debt, then they can collect it from the fields which were sold. Right? Because from the day of the ksuba on, it's a debt. If you hold its inheritance, they cannot collect it. So the guys from Pumpadisa said, Leitar from Mimeshabdim. The male children's ksuba that they collect cannot collect from the sold properties. Why not? Because they say in the Mishnah, said that they're in Yirsun Tanan. They inherit it. Inheritance cannot be collected from fields sold. B'nei Masa Machasya Amri, the people of Masa Machasya said, Tarfam and Meshabda, they do get from the sold fields. Why? Yizbun Tanan, because the Mishnah doesn't say they inherit it. The Mishnah says you can collect it as a debt. So this is the argument between Pumbadisa and Masa Machasya. If the father writes to the wife, the kids you have from me will inherit this ksuba, If it's inheritance, they cannot collect from the bought fields. If it's, they can collect, then it's a debt, then they could get it. And the Gemara says, what's the halacha? Lay tarfe mi mishavde. It's like the Gemara said, the halacha is like the guys from Pumpadisa, because in the Mishnah it says, yersin tanan. It doesn't say, will collect the money. It says they will inherit the money of the ksuba. That means, if the woman was alive, she can go to the bias and collect the fields. But her kids that are inheriting her ksuba cannot go to the buyers, because the Gemara rules that loch is its inheritance, not a collection. Inheritance, you cannot take away fields from the people that bought it, but a debt, you could, because there's a lien on the property.
Basically, ksuba stops with the death.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but they inherit that ksuba money.
That's just with the original value of the ksuba.
Original value of the ksuba from fields that the father has presently. Not fields which were sold. The wife would be able to go to the fields that were sold and collect it. He can't. Okay, then it's...
Why would the Gemara be so busy, if I may ask, when all 200 zuz is a simple amount. Was every single contract so large that this had to be... Because a field...
200 zuz is a big contract in those days.
You have to worry about four fields, five fields, the other property, this, that.
You'd be surprised. There's a lot of... Today is a whole different world. Today, Bechla, they don't collect the ksuba. Because, huh?
She's live on it for a whole year.
A lot of money.
No, but you're saying you were worried about another
field.
Well,
you'll see in a safer tonight. I was looking up something else about a ksuba. It says, they were talking about the value of the ksuba. 200 zuz.
Today's probably 200 million.
4,000 grams of silver.
In those days, there's an English
halacha book that discusses it. Ranges, it's interesting. The amount of the ksuba in opinions in contemporary halacha ranges from, I think, a few hundred dollars to like tens of thousands of dollars.
If it's tens of thousands
But today they don't collect the ksuba.
In those
anyway
days, then I can see they're all as concerned. But otherwise, a lot of this seems like it'd just be frugal.
Are you kidding? They used to fight over pennies. In those days, the people were pinching pennies. The Gemara in Bava Metzia says a story. You find a document. You don't know who is it. Is it the lender? Is it the borrower? Whose document it is? And the Gemara says you can't collect from it anyway. So the Gemara says, so who cares who you return it to? It's a worthless document anyway. So the Gemara says it's a bottle cap. It's used as a bottle cap. They used to fight over such crazy things. Even today, the divorce cases, they fight over crazy things. Little penny, cheap things. Okay, metaltalim. Next, what happens if for the ksuba there was money, movables that were existing? V'sinu b'nayu, and they're still intact. Okay, everybody says she can collect without an oath. Okay, meaning, and this is an important note to the next two cases. Normally, the Gemara says when a woman after the husband dies wants to collect the ksuba, Chacham said she has to swear that she didn't get it yet. Why? Because many husbands would leave, it was called Sorori Itfisa. The husband would leave over a bundle somewhere for the woman to collect the ksuba. And we're afraid maybe she got it already.
She got the bundle.
She got the bundle of money already. Okay. And now she's coming to ask it again. So therefore the Chacham said, a woman wants to collect the ksuba, she has to swear. Okay?
These women.
Now, if the movables that were designated, okay, for the ksuba, if it's intact, we're not afraid he gave her a different bundle. Meaning, if there's tangible items that the husband designated for the ksuba, she doesn't have to swear. What are you afraid? Maybe he gave her another bundle that the husbands don't do. They'll make one group of one bundle for her ksuba. So therefore, if that bundle is there and she says, I want to collect my ksuba, she doesn't have to swear. But now, what happens, l'sinu b'nayu, what happens if they're not there in the estate? These movable items. Does the woman have to swear when she's coming to collect the ksuba or not? So, pumpadisa amra b'lay shvua, she doesn't have to swear. Okay? Because we still assume that she didn't get it. But a masim chazi amir b'shvu, she has to swear. Okay? Because maybe the husband left a second bundle. What's he talking about here? Yeah, jumped the gun a little bit over here, looking later. Okay. First, what happened? The bundle was lost. So therefore, Pumpadisa says she doesn't have to swear. Why? Because it's probable that he didn't, if the money was lost, we're not afraid maybe he gave her another bundle of money. You know, this bundle of money that he designated for got lost. So what are we afraid now? Maybe he gave her a different bundle because the first bundle was lost. We say no, she doesn't have to swear. B'nei Mechasi says she does have to swear. Why? Because maybe he did give her a second bunch of money, and maybe she got the money already, now she wants to come to collect again. So the din is, like Pumpadisa says, she doesn't have to swear. Here's a very interesting thing. Many times, people, and this is very practical today, by the way, you know, many times they write these beautiful ksubas, they hang up all over the place. Okay, it's not a great idea. Sometimes, the ksuba, the way it's written, is not kosher. The artist made a mistake in the names or the dates or whatever. So what a lot of people...
Well, the rabbi reads it up there.
That's one minute. The rabbi... Well, if the rabbi is a rabbi, then he checked it before, made sure it was kosher. Mm-hmm. What happens, though...
Not like in the garage. Okay?
No, but I'll tell you... Yeah.
Not the garage. How about here?
It's not a garage. So the interesting point is like that. What happens... Okay, they say, you know, but sign the ksuba anyway... With its witness that they should hang it up, and we'll give you another ksuba.
Another rolled up.
A little rolled up, a little tiny one.
Which a lot of
You're
people,
not allowed to do that.
But a lot of people do that. A lot of them allow it.
No, they don't. Not if they know what they're doing.
What?
So the thing is, you're not allowed to do that. Why? Why? Just think about it. Now she has two ksubas, she can collect twice. She shows one ksuba.
So what happens if you don't
one
sign
minute, one
that
minute,
that's
one minute, one minute, one minute. So one ksuba she collects. Okay? And then later she'll come to another bezdin somewhere that doesn't know the story of the first one. She said, I have a legal ksuba, she'll collect the second time. So what do you have to do, Pearl?
To write something.
Either the witnesses don't sign on the fancy ksuba, because trust me, nobody knows the difference anyway.
Right.
Or on the first ksuba, you write posel. Because otherwise a woman, you can't give a woman two ksubas, because then she'll collect twice. Understand? It's a similar, it's a very interesting thing. I had this twice in my life. But when I was much, much younger, I had to do a case of a guy remarried his divorcee. I'm talking about over 30 years ago this happened. Guy had to remarry his divorcee. So it's a whole textbook, so it's a whole thing. But then the rabbi I was consulting with, I was a young kid then, the rabbi I was consulting with happened to be my father, I think. He told me, make sure you take away the get from her. The husband gave her a get. Okay, you don't have the get, but the form that she got divorced. So I said, okay, I didn't know. I'm going to go make the wedding. Yeah? He said, make sure before you do the wedding that you take away the get from the wife. Right? Because she has a get. You have to take it away. Why? Because if they get into a fight, she just takes out the get and shows she's divorced. And we don't know that she remarried. Right? So she can,
but isn't there a ksuba for the second marriage?
Not talking about the ksuba, talking about the get.
But isn't there a ksuba already for the second marriage?
She won't bring it out. She want to get married again. She had to fight with the husband again.
She
showed the rabbi again, she'll go remarry. What the rabbi is. I mean, how are they supposed to know any different?
Rabbi, let me ask you while you're at it. We didn't get to it. Putting in that you have to give a get these days.
Prenup?
Yeah. Whatever it is, or wording it in such a way.
It's called the prenup.
Right.
It's a very massive halachic debate. And bottom line is, the modern Orthodox are for it, and the frum are against it.
And if you're asked, what do you answer if I'm asked?
I personally don't do it. If you want to do it, then do whatever you want. I don't do it.
Because I'm trying to remember now when I got married, Sean. Better let me, but you're right. Why? We didn't sign the piece of art. didn't touch it.
Right.
And then the little one in the scroll, that because they're all married. Like, oh, yeah, I'm just trying to remember because I had two because I had a beautiful. Sure. This guy made me a gorgeous.
No, the prenup you mean? Yeah. No, the problem with a prenup.
Had a wrong name.
What?
Had a name wrong.
There's okay. One second. There's a din like this. A ksuba. I mean, No. A get forced by a Jewish bezdin is a kosher get. Okay, a get forced by civil courts. Now, the civil courts forces a Jew to give his wife a get. It's not a kosher get. So they originally made what was called in New York a long time ago. They called it the get law in New York State. Basically the courts were forcing the husband to give a get, which was according to all opinions not kosher. Correct? Because if a guy forces a Jew to give a get, it's not a kosher get. So now what they did was in the new prenups that they arranged, basically, there's a lot of different types. But basically the gist of it is that if a Beis Din decides that you need to give a get, every day that you don't give a get, you have a $150 fine. So the husband has to pay, and it's enforced in court.
That's good.
Moment. That's the prenups.
That's in New York.
No, all over America. Whoever does it. So what happened basically is, so officially, it's not the courts forcing you to give a get. All the courts is doing is making you pay a fine of $150. So therefore, a guy's going to have to pay, and that's held up in court, but that's not a get. That's financial fine. You have to pay $150 a day, man, after what?
$4,500 a month. Some guys don't care.
But the question...
Guys don't pay. Guy's not paying.
Okay, but the point is, according to many, many, many opinions, that's still called a forced get.
Guy's not paying.
Who's not paying?
People are not paying because some guys don't want to pay.
So the court makes it pay.
When these halachas, obviously it's a different way. When I was in school, I didn't think to ask this question because I learned this Gemara. When these halachas were created, wasn't there any thought that this is going to be an issue? Guy's going to hold that get from his wife? There's going to be wars? Were there no issues like that when the Gemara was written?
You mean when Chumash was written?
Chumash, what are you?
That's God. Next time you talk to him.
No, but Rabbi,
we have some guys in this show that God talks to them.
Okay, I call you. Just from a fundamental question point of view, looking at today's generation, look at the wars, the newspapers, the serifs, the this, the that. This is all.
And a mamzer? Is it fair?
It becomes a guy.
What do you mean it becomes? A guy's a mamzer, yeah? No way out. The guy's a real mamzer. I don't mean what we call a guy a mamzer.
No.
He's legally a mamzer.
Born out of wedlock.
What do you do?
And it wasn't his fault.
not born out of wedlock. No, that's not a mamzer.
From a forbidden marriage.
From forbidden marriage. That's what
Married woman, incest, whatever.
Is there people like that today?
Yeah.
What, mamzerim?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. It's funny that you say that. My father got remarried many years after the divorce, and they didn't invite me. And I get a call from some rabbi. He wanted to make sure, because he wasn't my father. I haven't met the guy in my life. He found the rabbi to marry him that was asking shaylos. Wanted to meet me, to talk to me. I said, if you need to meet me after all these years, tell the old guy to send the ticket, whatever it was. I was a teenager. But they were very, you're right, there's the answer. And there are some rabbanim like yourself that are very strict that you're not going to go marry. There's a mamzer or something, there's something going on.
Anytime.
Being recorded.
Oh. Okay, what's the big deal?
So what? If a rabbi does a wedding, he has to check.
Right, that was the whole
Jewish
thing.
And there's a lot of issues.
But you didn't answer my question. So today, what, today's dilemma, how is this, we always look for answers, and this is
I don't know. It's a very big problem.
That's a quick
idea. Okay, let's go. Yichla Arba.
Just shoved it under the rug.
Yichla Arba Arba Mitzrayim.
It's not a halacha
issue. That's not the point. It's big problems.
Okay. Now, if a husband designated a land, okay? Right? A guy says to his wife, this land, and he gives all four boundaries, all four borders. Everybody agrees. B'lay Shua, the woman can collect that piece of land, which was designated for a ksuba, without any oath. But b'chad mitzvah, whatever, if he only delineated the land by one border. In other words, the husband said, the land bordering this river is yours. So, pumpadisa amira b'lei shvua. She can still collect it without swearing. And b'nei masim achasi amira, she has to only collect it with an oath. What's the question? If the land is clearly defined or not. Masim achasi holds, the land is not clearly defined when they only makes it one border. When he delineates one border. Therefore, it's like any other property. She has to swear that she didn't get the ksuba. Pumbedisa says, one boundary is enough to show this is the field that she's supposed to collect for the ksuba, and therefore if she's coming to collect that field from the ksuba, she doesn't have to swear. And the Hilchos of the Halacha is b'lei shvua. Okay? Now there's another interesting argument. Amar le'edim kisu v'chismu v'havali. Okay? A guy says to two witnesses, write, seal, and give a document to somebody else. Whatever document, he's giving a piece of land, somebody is a, whatever. Yeah? A guy wants to give a piece of land to somebody. So he tells two witnesses, I want you to write the document, sign the document, and give him the piece of land. Okay? Can the witnesses just go ahead and do it? So everybody agrees, they don't have to talk to the donor again before giving the guy the document. If kanumine, meaning, I'm sorry, if they made a kinyan with the guy, they picked up a handkerchief with the guy. In other words, like this, I come over to two witnesses and I say, I want you to write a document, sign the document, give him the document that I'm giving him this piece of land. And I make a kinyan with the witnesses. Okay? Then you two guys do it. You don't have to talk to me about giving it. You just give it to him.
When he claims it?
No, just give it to him. I told you to give it to him. I want to give him a gift, a piece of land. What happens, le'konumine, if the witnesses did not perform a kinyan on behalf of the recipients? Okay? So, pumpadisa amre, no, it's done this. Le'tzarech amluchebe, they don't have to ask him. And b'nei masim chasi, they do need to ask him. And that's because maybe he changed his mind. In other words, like this. If I tell you two guys, yeah, write a document that I'm giving him a piece of land.
You're giving him a piece of land.
Right. And we're the witnesses. And I come to you two. I do me a favor. Write the document that I'm giving him a piece of land. Sign the document and give him the document. Okay?
And to give him the land, obviously.
That document, he's giving them the land.
The
so the question is, can you two just do that and give him the land? Maybe I changed my mind. Until you give it to him, I could still change my mind, right? Even if I write a document for myself, and before I give it to you, I change my mind. Okay? So the Gemara says like this. If I made a kinyan with the witnesses, I mean, I was kind of for the recipient, then you guys don't even have to ask me anymore if I was agreed to it or not, because obviously if I made a kinyan, I still agreed to it. But if I didn't make a kinyan with you, I just told you write, sign, and give. So Pumbedisa says, you don't have to re-ask him, because if he passes, he didn't change his mind. They say, you have to ask him again. Here the interesting, until now, the halacha is like Pumbedisa, Hilchasa, Sarech, Emlucha, Beit. They do have to ask him. They have to make sure he didn't change his mind. Okay, we're going to leave it here. Yeah.